Thank you for downloading the One Mic, One Voice show, episode 5. Today we will focus on the state of education in our country. Dr. W.E. Du Bois said the function of the university is not simply to teach breadwinning or to furnish teachers for the public schools or to be the center of polite society. It is above all to be the organ of the fine adjustment between real life and the growing knowledge of life, an adjustment which forms the secret of civilization. Let's talk. Welcome to the One Mic, One Voice show, Building the Collective Conscious. I'm here along with my co-host. I'm Michael Eric Owens. I'm here with
Deshaun Lamar Thornton.
Yes.
Oh, I switched it up on you this time.
Yeah. You
you know what? I kind of feel like because your name is like three parts and it all flows really well together, I can be DT, but okay. Michael Eric Owens, now I'm Deshaun Lamar Thornton today.
Well, you know what, man? You know, three is better than one or two, you know. But again, DT is strong, bro. It's like to the point.
Yeah, that's it.
Downtown. That's what we're doing today. But, man, I tell you what, there's a lot going on in the news, brother. And I'm just excited about what we're going to do today. But let's just touch for a moment on what's in the news, man. This ISIS thing that is happening, man. They, again, the captives are reported being beheaded. We had a crash. Matter of fact, as related to ISIS, there's a Mississippi couple, I don't know if you heard about this, that planned to take their honeymoon to join ISIS.
Wow.
You know, I don't know what that's about.
That's called ride or die right there.
Right. I don't know what, I don't know how you make travel arrangements for that. You know, give me, one straight flight to ISIS.
What's the itinerary once you land though?
I know, man.
What's the first step?
Right. Okay. I mean, it's crazy because, ISIS is a serious, serious problem, man. And a dangerous group that is wreaking havoc all across the Middle East, man. And even in our country, you know, this pledging to that. So that's going to stay in the news, man. We had a copter go down that crashed in Japan. And, you know, Clinton now is releasing all of those, the server information. I mean, people have been on her about her emails and so forth, man. And I just think it's smoke and mirrors, man.
Yeah.
I mean, again, in my opinion, the Clintons are part of the establishment. Yet, you know, I would like to see just a clean campaign from both sides. There's also a study out that talks about too much homework. There's been just too much homework for kids. I don't know. When I was growing up, okay, we had homework. I'm going to put it like this. Air night.
Early day.
Okay. Every night we had homework, man. And I don't know what's too much homework involves, because I know some schools are not giving out homework at all, man. So, again, Donald Trump is in the news, man. He's monopolizing the news. They even said Megyn Kelly is getting death threats now, man.
Wow.
I'm like, really, man? So how do you get, like, offended as a lady and all of a sudden you get death threats, man?
Man, it's almost kind of you don't know what to take seriously these days, because they're on the one end, you know, she's getting death threats. But, you know, how many of those people are actually wanting to take this lady's life? And how much of it is just, you know, to fuel the campaign of Donald Trump, who is just on a rant right now?
Yeah, I mean, it again, man, I just, as we said in our last, I think, podcast, this idea of how do you get behind a cat that just disparages women right and left, and minorities and so forth. So to me, it's interesting. I don't know what it says for the Republican Party, but I'm embarrassed by it, and basically I'm an independent, so I'm embarrassed by it. Period, man. But I, you know, our show today, we're talking about education. And I know for some people, this topic of education, you know, we talking about it a lot, DT. We don't necessarily solve a whole lot of problems, man. But unless we put it at the forefront and we continue to talk about these issues, man, our kids, all kids, I'm not talking about black kids or white kids, Latino, all our kids are suffering
right,
because of the lack of quality education, man. Talk about your experience. You are an educated man. You have your master's degree, man. You have come through, you know, all the different levels of education. Talk about that experience for you.
I had a quite a diverse background in education. I started off at Millwood Elementary School, predominantly black students. Of course, there was a different culture there, different atmosphere there, lots of things to consider, things you don't have to necessarily consider going to some other schools. But I know that for me, man, I think my mother was really a big anchor in helping me stay focused. And that was the most important thing, because I can think of several times when there was some buffoonery going on in the classroom and I just could not be a part of it because I knew what the expectation was, and I knew that my mother would be holding me to a different standard once I got home. So yeah,
she was gonna hold you.
I had to tread lightly, man, but I was always a pretty good student. I think back then there were a lot less distractions than kids have these days, so it's a lot harder for them to, like you said earlier, there's the homework problem. To me, that just speaks to a lack of focus, one, in the kids, and then the initiative that the parents are not taking to further that education outside of the classroom. Because it seems like once you send your kid to school, you know, you completely leave it up to the teachers, administrators, coaches, whoever, to essentially raise that child. And it can't be that way, because if that's the only influence they have, once you get home and you're noticing they're being disrespectful, they don't want to listen to you. They don't want to do, because there are a lot more of their influence is coming from the outside than it is coming from at home. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. So I guess those are really things to consider. But for myself, like I said, being able to stay focused and have my mother as an anchor was beneficial for me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you hit on so many important points there, and you know, talk about this idea of when you went to the collegiate level, and how was that change and kind of your focus as far as your education was concerned.
Okay, so that was another huge turning point in my life, because I came from Millwood High School, graduated all, like I said, all black student population. And then on to a private Catholic university. So we're watching the monks are, you know, all black with their hoods on. The nuns are walking around the campus. And it's just like a culture shock, man. I thought that stuff didn't really exist in real life. I remember watching Sister Act for the first time and thinking to myself, like, okay, that's who these people are. But, you know, it was a really different culture from what I was used to. Now, I was still able to go through and do my thing. I didn't feel any negativity behind it. You know, they supported us. They didn't make us feel like we were having to succumb to their influences as far as religion and things like that. So it was really a positive experience overall. But it was a little challenging at first, trying to adjust to everything that I was seeing that was new and different from what I was used to.
Catholic college, you know, talk a little bit, because I know you shifted with your master's degree. Right. So talk about that experience.
Okay, so like I said, coming from Millwood High School, predominantly black, back to St. Gregory's University, the contrast of, you know, Catholic private was a big change. And so after I finished my bachelor's degree at St. Gregory's University, I went to Langston, Oklahoma City to get my master's degree. Now, Langston, of course, is a HBCU. Have much love and respect for Langston. The Lyon whole family have showed lots of love and support throughout the years, and they have done a great job of trying to put a more of a positive light on Langston, because we all know that, you know, over the years it's had its reputation. But Langston is a great school. I must admit that I had a more of a rigorous bachelor's degree program, but when I got into my master's program at Langston, it made it that much better, because all the information was that transparency that I needed to go through and get it done.
No, that's great, man. That journey, it's like you touched on a couple of things that are completely different, man, from the Catholic to the HBCU you, you know, I mean, it's cool because that's like a myriad of experiences that you develop into creating who you are,
right?
You know,
and it's like all those things, like you're saying, have made me this person, you know, with all these different experiences and different things I was able to do in college, undergrad, and going on to the Langston program. There was a lot of activity all the time. And, you know, whether that was deciding whether to go to the mass ceremony just to kind of see what that was like on the campus. They had a specific artifact museum there on campus at St. Greg's University where I went. Man, it was just so cool just to kind of understand the different sides of life. No matter where you go, there's always something different. And, you know, those of us who can become interested and say, I wonder what that's about, as opposed to turning our nose up, I think that make the difference too in the experiences we get and the type of person we become.
And I mean, that's so true, man. I mean, I did a year of college and then I went into the military. You know, I was in the Navy for sailor for 13 years, went all around the world, lived in Scotland for a couple of years and so forth. And then I went back to school. So I was a non-traditional student. You know, I went to the University of Wisconsin Parkside, man, which is in southern Wisconsin, which is I had some of the most dynamic professors, man. I have, you know, Professor Lord Gillott and Professor Ed Schmidt and others, man. I mean, they just poured into me. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, they took an interest in me. Mm-hmm. And in my my learning ability, man, it sparked something in me that I did not even know was there,
man.
You know? So it was that professors that poured and made a difference in my life, man. Dr. Longway, man, which was my philosophy professor, man, just sitting back talking to dude, and man, he should just blow my mind about life and how I should look at things and how I should, you know, really try to work on myself, man, and the self-actualization, trying to reach my full potential. Man, it was deep, man. And then, you know, from there, I went to the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, man, when I got my master's at. And I'll tell you something about the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. My dad retired from that university, get this, as a janitor. Every time I walked those halls of that university, every time I sat in a classroom, I realized that my dad had taken out the trash. He had scrubbed and waxed those floors. He had made that sacrifice so that I could go to the university. It was deep, man. It was almost like a spiritual experience, man. Every time I went there, man, and just to know that, and my father had a third grade education, bro. You understand what I'm saying? And for his son to be able to reach that level. You know, that's what it's all about, man, I think. And so for me, education is so important.
It's so important. And we got to keep encouraging each other to keep pushing those kids, man, because we never know. It could be us, those, like you're giving this example of these people who pushed you through and helped you feel like you could accomplish something. It was the same for me going to St. Gregory's University where, you know, obviously the demographic of black students is not very high. And mind you, the only students who were there that were black were athletes. You know, luckily for me, I didn't have to have that kind of stigmatized relationship with the campus because I had an academic scholarship as well. So it wasn't just like I was an athlete on campus. They actually understood that I had some knowledge too. But, you know, going back into the appreciation of teachers, I had two teachers that were really, really, really adamant, man, about me going as hard as I could because they understood. Like, I tried. And it's just like all of us. We try to sometimes hold our talents back just so we can fit in with our so-called peers, you know. And when I started writing, it was really reflection-based and based on, you know, whatever assignment we had to turn in. We had to also give, like, a reflection of why we felt the way we felt about whatever. And from a counseling standpoint, you know, for me, that was kind of mentally good, you know, to be able to get that energy off somehow, but also to have somebody in your corner saying, hey, man, I know you can do way better than what you're doing right now. Mm-hmm. You know, you need to be bringing this to the table.
Yeah.
And it was that standard I talked about, that, you know, these people who come around you and are helping you build to be your best.
Yeah, no doubt. You're smart, brother. Well, you know, it's interesting that you bring up the Catholic university, because my experience was I came up at a Catholic grade school and Catholic high school. And give you a little history here, of course, being from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. During that time, when I was coming up, they had de facto segregation, meaning that they were busing black kids to white schools, and there was no interaction. So you would bus to a white school, separated in the classroom with black kids, and then they bus you back to your home school for lunch. So you had no interaction. Wow. It was crazy, right? And so my first few years, I went to public school, man, and school was synonymous with fear. And we're going to talk about bullying here, man, in this program, man. But I'm telling you, Milwaukee public schools at that time, man, was a war zone. I mean, man, it was like, how do you even learn under these? I mean, we were duking it out every single day. It was about survival, right?
Right.
And so my parents said, you know, we're going to get you out of here, man. So they sent me to Catholic grade school and high school. And at that time, the Catholic Church they started schools for minority kids. So although I went to a Catholic grade school, it was 99% black, which was really interesting. Now, my high school was 10% black. So that was a different sort of experience, man. But once I went to private school, man, it was like, this is what school is supposed to be like, man. You know,
real relaxed.
Yeah. You know, nobody was trying to, you know, go upside my head or, you know, I was right. Like, man, what is this? You know, it's this school. I'm running home every day, man. It was crazy. You know, I talk about it in my book, right, man. So it was just really, really out of control. And so, But I think from a parental standpoint, man, my parents, although they were not graduates of higher academia, they felt like their kids need to get an education. Mm-hmm. There was a standard, as you talked about. You weren't going to go in school and mess around, because if they call Mama Owens, Papa Owens, it was on. Man. You know, the last thing you wanted to do was look up and see your mom in the hallway.
Yeah, my grandma would come up to the school, man, just to check on you. And she'd ask questions to the teacher specifically about your behavior. It's like, you know, not, you know, how's he doing all right? Not the positive, you know, introduction to the conversation. Like, is he doing anything wrong today? Like, and it's just like, man, you know, like you're saying, grandma, mom, all those people we had to support us, you know, throughout their process, who kept it kind of kosher. As opposed to now, you know, there's little parent involvement. There's a little support for even the teachers in the school. So there's a lot of disparity, a lot of things that are happening that aren't necessarily benefiting the child in the long run.
And you hit on this point about the socialization of a child. I mean, at one time, the parents were kind of the main parents in the and the preacher and the uncle and the aunt were those that socialized that child, were those that taught that child what life was about, how to conduct themselves. And now we're in this technological age, as you point out, that there's so many other influences that are stronger than what happens in the home. Now, you take the father out the home, right? Most minority communities, you take the father out of home, the mother's trying to work, she's got very little time to spend with the child. What's socializing the child? You know what? Facebook, okay, the television. And so they're getting all of this impulses from the commercialization of our society, which all they want to do is get them to spend money.
Right.
And so we see kids developing in a way, man, that is antisocial. You know, the behavior is out of control. I used to tell people when I was the manager of Ralph Ellison Library, I used to tell people, my staff, listen, they're not going to come in here for 1 or 2 hours and have a sort of behavior that is acceptable in your sight when they've been out of control all day long.
Right.
I mean, it's just not going to happen. And you know for yourself, I mean, man, this is at the heart of what you're doing. When you walk into the schools, man, it's like,
man. You know, and it's crazy because we don't think about all the psychological things that have to do with receiving a good education or even feeling good about the education that you are receiving. So to walk through my high school, middle school, elementary school, and look around, look up and see the walls falling down, see the crack in the paint, see the cheap facilities we have around there. A lot of those things do not give a kid the energy or the want to embrace his education in a way that it will make him feel, you know, like he's getting everything he needs from this place.
I've seen some of these schools, DT. They look like prisons, man. I'm just going
to
be honest.
And I just put you to mind frame.
Yeah, like, what? Your metal detectors and got police officers, man. I'm like, is this school or is this like juvie? Because I'm confused, down. Man. You know, I mean, it has come to that when you see a lot of these schools, and I'm like, I don't know how you learn in this environment. And like you say, with the aesthetics of the building, it's just not sending a message that you are our best. We want to invest in you that way.
I had another kid I was working with, and he just recently transferred schools. And so I went with him and his mother to go check the school out just to kind of see what it was like, you know, if it would be a good place for him to, you know, have a new start, so to speak. And, you know, this kid is 5. One of the first things he said as he's walking up and down the hall looking around is, why does it look like this in here? And, you know, he's 5 years old. So to me, that's sending another message like, man, he can automatically tell that there is something different about this whole atmosphere place he's in than where he came from. You know, it's a lot nicer. It's a private school, mind you. And these people are really invested in helping these kids, you know, maximize their potential. And that 5-year-old kid knew that right away when he stepped into the building wondering, why does everything look different from where I came from?
Wow. So what does that say about the state of education, man, in our country today?
Man, I think the teachers are tired. There's definitely more responsibility, especially trying to combat all the emotional issues in the classroom, social issues, behavior issues, you know, managing a bigger size classroom than you're allowed to in a way. But, you know, with the shortage of teachers this year, it's like, well, I guess for the past few years, it's bringing that pressure on the teachers in a negative way. And the children are suffering from it.
And you know, what stands out to me mostly is you have you have this enormous lack of male teachers. I mean, you can go to any school, and I don't know. I don't see male teachers in the classroom. Now, I have a theory, DT, and this is, you know, we've talked about this, but I'm gonna give my theory on the One Mic, One Voice show. My theory is you're not going to get male teachers because the pay is too low. You might say, well, you know, money's not everything. However, you know, let me just speak for me, okay? Starting off $30,000+ is not going to get me to take care of my family and do the things I need to do,
right?
Okay? You need to raise the pay. It's not like they don't deserve it. It's not like they're not doing the work. I mean, that's one of the hardest jobs in the country.
Yes.
And so it's not like you're giving them more money than what they have been earning. You need to, if you raise the salary to a decent salary, starting out, these men that are coming out of college, you raise it to, you know, $50,000, $40,000, $45,000, $50,000 a year, you're going to see male teachers come into the industry. And I don't care what anybody says. Boys need men.
Yes.
I don't care what you can say what you want to say. You hearing from a boy. I needed a man in my life. I still need a man in my life. And how dare do we think you can raise that strictly a woman can raise a man child? Not possible. Just like me. I have a daughter. I'd be lost trying to raise my daughter by myself. Right. You know what I mean? I'm just keeping it real, folks. We need men, and we need to have this paradigm and how we look at the funding for teachers. To me, it's almost a deliberate act to keep males out, because you know men are not going to apply for a position, especially educated men, are not going to apply for positions where they're not making the money that they think they're worth. And so that's the solution. But it's such a bureaucracy, though, right? I mean, when you look at the size of these districts and how they're trying to, manage, it's impossible to manage those many teachers, those many students. To me, it's a failed system. It's a broken system. And you almost need to just reform the whole system. No Child Left Behind leaves every child behind.
I agree. But like you said, with this reform you're talking about, at what level, I mean, do people understand that, you know, it needs to change, but also of what level of seriousness are they willing to take to change it? Because I think that that's been most people's hang up, is that we all understand that things need to change. We all understand that things need to be different. But nobody is gung-ho to start that revolution. You know, nobody's gung-ho to get that initiative started. And so we sit back, you know, talking about all the changes and things we need to do and clear up years and years and years and years and years later, and it all stays the same.
We don't even have enough teachers, DT. We don't even have enough teachers, do we?
Not at all. Actually, the numbers are grim in several states that are among the nation's largest producers of new teachers. In California, teacher training enrollment is down a whopping 53% in the last 5 years. Enrollment is down sharply in New York State and Texas as well. In North Carolina, enrollment is down nearly 20% over the last 3 years. Bill McDermott is dean of the School of Education at the University of North Carolina, where this article comes from. But yeah, so we're talking about across the board, nationwide. Teachers are
even in Oklahoma City.
In Oklahoma,
right?
There are 1,000. We're 1,000 down. In May, reported 1,000 teachers down. Mm-hmm. And now think about that as the student population continues to grow, as the districts, as you mentioned, continue to grow. Where do these students go, and where do the teachers come from that are going to service these kids?
And it's, you know, the conversation is almost borderline fatalistic, right? Because we're looking at it from the macro level. We're looking at all of the problems that exist. Man, you know what? You might as well give up because it seems insurmountable. However, the only way to deal with this is to start on the local level, to start with your school in your neighborhood, working with your principal. Working with your kids, building that mentor, you know, the counseling, all those things that need to happen at that little micro school that somehow can have a ripple effect moving out. I think sometimes we just get caught up, you know, in the big details, not understanding that you need to win this war one school by one school, because the leaders, I'm going to tell you like, and I've thought like this for years. You can't look to the national level. You can't even look to the state level for leadership. Mm-hmm. You're not going to get leadership there. The leadership now in the 21st century is from the ground up. It's folks like you and me, folks like listening to the One Mic right now. It's folks like us that needs to take a leadership role to change the trajectory of what's happening with the state of education.
Totally agree, man. Totally agree.
Man, let's just talk for a moment, man, about bullying.
Bullying. Oh, man. Actually, you know, I was really immersed in the bullying culture. I mean, if we can call it that, because there was a man that I ran into through the Upper Bound program I used to work for. His son committed suicide, man.
Wow.
From being bullied at school. Wow. Now, think about that. When we were young, you know, somebody told you had a big head or big nose or your breath stink or something like that. You just come with a crack back like, man, no, your breath stink. Your breath stankier. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But now, man, it's so serious that these kids are taken into a level to make people feel like they don't even matter, that their life is just dispensable, and that, you know, these people go home with all this stress and they get home, they get on the internet, and there it is again.
Yeah.
You know, somebody went viral based on some, you know, rumor or whatever the case may be. Yeah. And it's just sad that that's the direction that it's going in. But it's a really big issue. I think parents need to talk more to their children about bullies, what to do, have a plan in place, because, man, it could cost them their life. And that's the last thing you want to do is get a call from your school about your child committing a suicide.
Yes. Yes. I mean, you know, if you read my book, I mean, I talked about I was bullied as a child. Man, I had green eyes, man. They couldn't deal with it for some reason. I'm just like, what is wrong with these people, right? I mean, they want to fight me, man. Cat eyes, just crazy stuff, man. I'm like, dude, I'm just trying to learn, you know. And so, but the person that's being bullied will never talk. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the key. You got to understand, because especially if you're a boy, you know, you're supposed to be tough. You're supposed to be able to handle yourself. And so there is this idea that, or this fear of sharing that vulnerability, you know, that I'm afraid, you know, that I'm being hurt. And when I was growing up, you know, your father, he probably slap you around if you said you were afraid. You know what I mean? Yeah. It was like, boy, get tough, you know, that sort of thing. And so you have this culture, right? Mm-hmm. That's created, man. But it is, it's sad that we still see this happening, you know, all around us, man. And this idea of taking your self-worth off of what others say about you. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You got a big head. So what? My head is big. I'm smart. My brain's bigger. You know what I mean? Yeah, so
we had good comebacks back then.
You know. But it's such a serious, serious topic, man. And my heart goes out to you. Have parents, man. I've met parents that they're trying to work with the school, and the school is not working with them. Their child is terrified, so they're trying to keep their child at home, and the child is suffering, man. And like we talked about earlier, now social media, man, where you're putting people on blast on social media, you know, you pass out or something, man, and you in the locker room, they taking a picture of you, now they putting you on social media, and all of this culture is in the education system. And then we wonder why our kids are not learning, why our schools are a war zone. And like I say, DT, I think the only way that we begin to solve this problem is to look at it school by school. How do we make this a strong school? How do we strengthen the principal and the teachers and so forth? That's the only way I think we can solve it.
Also, I noticed that once we were getting this campaign started, after the guy and his son were identified, we tried to get a plan in place. So most schools should have what they call a bullying plan, you know, a protocol or a kind of an agenda of things that don't happen in a certain order, you know, once bullying has been identified or is happening. And so if you're a parent out there listening, if you have a child that is in school, find out what your school's bullying plan is, or if they have one, or what are the steps that you need to take if bullying occurs, because it can't be this thing where we keep pushing it to the side. You know, we let JJ thump Thompson upside his head every day, Monday through Friday, and we just tell them to leave each other alone. But we know that's having an effect on Thompson. So we can't let this keep going on and nobody's doing anything. Because, you know, legally, you know, you can be brought up on charges, you know, should you neglect certain areas of seriousness when it comes to life, you know.
Yeah. I mean, and again, you bring up a very important point. Parents, talk to your kids. I mean, keep that dialogue going. Probe. You know, you hear nowadays, well, you know, my child, you know, I respect their privacy. Man, I didn't have any privacy when I was growing up. You know, zero privacy. Moms was in everything, sock drawer. You know what I mean? She was looking at every single thing. If I had had social media when I was growing up, moms would have been logging into my Facebook. You know what I mean? Posting and stuff. You ain't supposed to be saying this, boy. So listen, man, there is no such thing as a child's privacy. Zero. We have to protect our kids. We have to know their friends, who they're involved with. We have to know it is our responsibility to raise them and to protect them. And sometimes, get this, protect them from themselves.
That's true. Even ourselves have to protect us from us, you know?
Yeah. One mic, one voice. We will be right back.
Be sure to share and like us on our Facebook page, One Mic, One Voice Podcast. If you guys would like to email in questions, comments, or topics, you can reach me, dt@onemiconeVoice.com or Michael Eric Owens at onemiconeVoice.com.
And we're back. We have a special guest today, Mr. Kareem Muhammad, with us to talk about the Teachers Appreciation Foundation.
Second guess.
Second guess.
Second guess. And second, you know, I mean, ain't nothing wrong with second when you got a smooth brother like this. Now, I'd already paved the way for you because, see, we've been at certain events. And I'm telling you what, man, you are a smooth brother. You're not only talented, man. But you look good. I mean, that's a combination, and can dress like I told you, man. I said this, bro.
Shot.
And man, I'm gonna tell you what, man. You when I look at your Facebook, I see not just someone that's doing something. I see someone that is respected by people, and that means a lot, man. Because you look at Facebook and you see all these people on there and all this junk that's going on. When I see you sitting there, man, you are in pictures with some people that are doing some pretty amazing things. And that's because you're pretty amazing yourself, brother. And so we just appreciate you being here. And I know you want to talk to us about some things. So why don't you just go ahead and introduce yourself so that the listening audience will know what we know.
I do. I thank you. I thank you. I thank you. My name is Kareem Muhammad. I'm the executive director of Teachers Appreciation Foundation. And to brief you, give you a short briefing on how what inspired me to come up with this foundation is my mom, a school teacher of 30 years. I came to her with an idea to have an annual luncheon for retired school teachers. At the time, she was like, I go to enough luncheons. She wasn't really... she wasn't really feeling the idea, so it forced me to go back and brainstorm, go back to the drawing board. I said, I got it. I want to create a movement that give accolades not only to school teachers, but everyone in the school system, the custodians, the cafeteria workers, the school bus drivers, everyone. So that's it pretty much in a nutshell.
That's great. I think you speak to the appreciation from the top to the bottom, because a lot of us, you know, grew up, I can only really speak for myself. You know, my grandmother instilled in me, you know, you treat the janitor the same way you treat the principal or the CEO, you
Absolutely.
Know. And so it's just like a man like yourself being able to set aside a space for people to find appreciation in whatever capacity of the school force they're in.
Mm-hmm.
So that's absolutely wonderful. I was going to ask you, what kind of reception have you got from teachers about the foundation? Or are you feeling like a big following? Are people participating?
Yeah. At this point, it's something like a shell shock to the community. Mm-hmm. It's the first of its kind. It's like the teachers, as you mentioned, they are it's like, wow, this is such a phenomenal thing that you came up with, you know. And some is, you know, they look at, okay, should I support this or what's really going on? I mean, so it's kind of mixed emotions at this point, but we are getting a good feel of the people.
And let me say, man, I love what you're doing, and I'm going to tell you why. Teachers are getting a bad rap. It's always if we get better teachers, as if teachers are not working hard, as if they're not trying to pour into their students. And so for you to come along and create an organization that says, we appreciate you, we see what you're doing, we want to support you, we want to help. I think you're right. It's the first of its kind. It is overdue. And I know it's going to be, I know it's already successful, but I know it's going to be even more successful.
Oh, yes, sir. And we have a thing that we do every year. We just had our past scholarship ball, which that went real well. Was able to give two scholarships to two school teachers.
Great.
That's continuing their education. We have a awards banquet that I got coming up here in January, where I get the public involved to nominate who they want to receive an award. If it's the school bus driver, if it's the custodian, anyone involved in the school system, if you want to nominate them, you know, we encourage people to hit us up on social media, all the social media platforms, email, phone calls, what have you. And so, you know, we getting the bugs worked out with that.
Can you give out some, like, if there's a number that they can call?
Yes, yes, yes. The number is 405-412-7458. And the email is weareone1@gmail.com.
Now I have to ask you, what is the significance with 1937?
That's the year my father was born.
All right.
He's now deceased.
I understand. Yeah, you know, a lot of the greats have left us, but they left us with a mission, with a desire to carry on and to do great things.
Absolutely.
And so I know you have this January event coming up. Is there anything in the meantime that you have coming up that you're working on that you want the listeners to know what's going on with the organization?
Just basically what we're doing now, just getting the awareness out, the word out to the people on the movement and the mission of this foundation. We're entertaining. We have to look at all platforms to get the word out. Like I said, it's the first of its kind, and we're molding the mind of the people, of the public. So when they hear Teachers Appreciation Foundation, they're not only thinking of teachers in the physical classroom, but everyone involved in the school system.
Okay. And so if I was a teacher, just say, I know it's for everyone, but if I was a teacher, or just say if I was a groundskeeper, how would I get involved with the organization? Would I call? Do you meet every so often? You know, how do I get involved?
Yes. First thing, I will encourage anyone that's interested in being involved in the movement is to email. Give me an email. Shoot me an inbox on Facebook, or even give us a call with the number we just gave out, and we can go from there.
Yeah. Great, great, great.
Listen, man, teachers need to be appreciated.
Absolutely.
Because obviously we see in Oklahoma especially that there's a disparity between the amount of teachers we need and what we actually have out there. We just talked about that previously before you came in. Is there anything you could say about that within itself, just being a sign of the lack of appreciation for teachers? We have 1,000 short teachers in Oklahoma City and growing every year.
Well, first and foremost, one thing that's backwards to me is we appraise a Kevin Durant, but we don't look at where he come from. Who was his second grade school teacher? Mm-hmm. Who was the third grade school teacher? Where did he come from before we give him these $1 million contracts? And the root of the base on where these guys come from, these guys that's quote unquote, you know, larger than life, we pay crumbs, sesame seeds to the root of where these guys even come from. And no, at the end of the day, it's not all about the currency, but at the end of the day, you have to have the proper currency in order to make sure their root is fed and nurtured properly.
Well, you again, man, I think you said something very profound. And Kevin, if you're listening, man, we love you. I'm just gonna say that, man.
we
want you to take the championship, bring it back here. Much love, KD. However, man, you are so true, man. The disparity between those not just educating, but molding them into greatness. How can it be, man? And that is just something in this country that we need to have a conversation on. We celebrate, as you say, we will celebrate, we will pay millions of dollars, but for the teacher, the second grade teacher, the third grade teacher, we don't want to pay them barely above a living wage. And so that is a major, major problem. So what I'm sounding, what I'm hearing here is maybe a level of advocacy too as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we're not here to start anything as far as reinventing the wheel. We're just putting a new spin on it.
All right.
I
like that.
People to know that, you know, you have to have a heart. My mom was a school teacher, like I said earlier, for 30 plus years. She had a passion for it. Wasn't about the money, but at the same time, each and every year when school starts, they're struggling for school supplies and, you know, giving these long lists for these kids to come with sanitation materials. And it's just, you know, at the end of the day, it's like it gets real sad and ridiculous. Yeah. You know, the level of sacrifice that these educators have to do each and every year, mm-hmm. even during the summer.
But I heard the children are our future, though. What happened to that?
That just sounds like a cliche. Or something, you know,
it sounds like something to say. Huh?
Just something to say. You know, just to be politically correct. Yeah, we have to get out here and work.
Yeah, yeah.
We have to get out here and work.
Yeah, yeah.
At least the advocacy, the platform from the foundation, at least give them something to really look forward to.
Yeah, yeah, I can see this being a great support and a source of teachers to turn to. Now, is this just for Oklahoma City Public Schools, or have you limited, or are you just open to educators and people? You tell us.
At this point, we're going statewide with it.
Okay,
my kids. I do have one in college, but two in college, actually. He's leaving tomorrow. But the rest of my kids are actually in Putnam City.
Okay.
Public schools.
I understand.
I reached out to them. I reached out to UConn. Mm-hmm. We reached out to Mustang Public Schools. So we're trying to go statewide with this movement.
And I'm happy to hear that, man, because kids are kids, regardless of where they're at, regardless of what community they live in, mm-hmm. they need to support through the teachers, and whether you're teaching in Putnam City or Oklahoma City, Moore, doesn't matter. You're still putting in the sacrifice, and that's a beautiful thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Brother, the number again is, I hope I got it right, it's 405-412-7458.
Yes.
Absolutely. And we, you know, support this organization. You know, maybe you don't know a teacher. Maybe you're not involved directly in education, but this is a way that you can support an organization that is there for teachers, there for staff. And I think it is worthy, not just of your time, brother. Can people volunteer too?
Absolutely.
You know, so
absolutely.
You're looking for wonderful volunteer opportunities to give back, to get involved. And make an impact in our education. That's what we've been talking about, DT, all day.
All morning.
The state of education. Yeah. If you want to make an impact, here's an organization that's going to do the work for you.
Yeah.
I mean, they're out here spearheading this work. And so give them a call. Reach him on Facebook. Because if you can find anybody, you can find Brother Kareem on Facebook. I'm just going to tell you like that, okay? The brother is visible. And again, 412-7458, that's 405. Any last words that you want our listening audience to know?
I want to thank you again. Thank you, brothers, for having me on. It's been a true, true honor, pleasure for allowing us to, you know, speak on the movement of this foundation. I do thank you.
And we want you to come back. So as you get close, and I think I can speak for DT, and he knows he can speak for me. We got it like that.
Okay.
You have an event coming up, man. You want us to talk about something. You want us to just announce it on open mic. You want to come do it yourself. That door is always open. Don't hesitate,
because
we love what you're doing. And beyond loving what you're doing, brother, we love you, because you are in our community making a difference, man. So I really appreciate you.
Thank you. Thank you.
One mic, one voice. We'll be back.
All right, Kareem. So we've heard a lot about how you got the foundation started, kind of some things you have coming up for the immediate future. But for our listeners, could you give these guys an idea of your end game goal? What is the big picture for you for the Teachers Appreciation Foundation?
I want the movement to grow to a level of inspiring the educators. I want my events to be the Grammys of the educators. I want it to grow so big to where people actually going to get their educational degrees to be recognized and honored by my foundation. So that's, I want to grow thing. Just that big. And instilling in these educators, giving them something to look forward to. Yeah, we know we can speak on the low pay grade, but even of giving that janitor, that custodian, the cafeteria worker something to look forward to. I believe that my foundation sets the platform, and that's beautiful. The ultimate goal for this movement.
That's beautiful.
Wonderful.
Well, there you have it, guys. Listen, if you have ever followed your dreams, if you know how to write your name, if you know how to read, you need to thank a teacher somewhere.
Yes, absolutely.
Absolutely. Welcome back to the One Mic, One Voice show. Kareem was awesome, man.
It was awesome, man.
And I tell you, man, I'm so impressed by, you know, his tenacious, you know, desire to make a difference with teachers, man. Yeah. I mean, it's and his, you know, his vision is not just with teachers, man. That's what's so unique about it. I mean, the janitor.
Yeah.
And in the teacher's assistant.
It's definitely a system, you know. They all work together.
Yeah, yeah. And to be appreciated, man, who doesn't want to be appreciated? And so I'm going to say this again. I mean, if you want to get involved, which I'm going to encourage you to do, I mean, you need to call 412-405-412-7458 and get involved, volunteer your time. Give your resources. I mean, money never hurts a nonprofit organization, right. That's trying to do some good in our community, man. It's been a wonderful, wonderful show, man. And again, I just appreciate you and for all that you do for this community, DT. You know, on this journey with you, I learned a whole lot about you today, man. You a Catholic boy. You see what I'm saying? Like me. You a Catholic boy, huh? Catholicism. You can't shake that. You know, I understand your religion now. Don't get me wrong. You're probably Baptist, right? Huh?
We're not going to talk about that.
We don't talk about that? Because, let me leave that one alone.
But if you guys like what you are hearing, please feel free to reach us on our Facebook page, One Mic, One Voice Podcast. Share, like, get the word out. Really open up this show to be able to give you guys an opportunity to say what you guys have to say. So please utilize it. Email us, dt@onemiconevoice.com or michaelericowens@onemiconevoice.com. Also, there's a section on our website, onemiconevoice.com. And there is a link where you can leave us comments for potential show ideas or just concerns you guys have. Anything that's on your mind, drop us a note. We'll look forward to hearing from you.
And coming up, man, this was a great show. Okay, everyone, phenomenal. Was a great show. You know, I should just even slap that from my vocabulary, man, because every show has been just so good, man. Coming up, we got Gregory Jerome, man. He's doing the first ever hip-hop festival here in Oklahoma City, and that's going to be at the Paramount downtown. So he's going to come and talk a little bit about that next week. We're also going to talk a little bit about Sandra Bland. And we want to kind of look at that as it's unfolding. There's been a lot of outcry about that. I want to put a plug in for something that's going to be happening August 27th at the Paramount downtown, 701 West Sheridan in Oklahoma City. It's put on by the Ralph Ellison Foundation, partnering with Perry Publishing and Broadcasting, Respect Diversity Foundation, and the Temple B'nai Israel. And it's a movie called Little White Lie, and I'll give you a synopsis about a lady that grows up, a young girl that grows up and comes to find out that she is not who she thinks she is, that her father, her mother actually had an affair with a black man. And it's a movie about identity. Mm-hmm. And following that that film screening, there will be discussion. So we'll be talking about that as we move forward to it. Little White Lie. Man, history will speak of us. Somewhere in the distant future, a scribe will reach down deep into the archives of our time. And what will she find? Will she discover that we overcame our differences? Will she find that out of many, we became one? Or will she find that we solved nothing and remain a divided people? Yes, history will speak of us.